All right. Everybody excited to learn how to build enterprise apps for Pocket PC 2003, second edition? Yeah? Yeah? It's going to be a hot market. Got app stores on the internet like Handango and Motricity. I think it's the wave of the future. You're just going to go on the web and download apps. So compact framework's where it's at. So I'm Rob Tiffany. I'm a mobile architect at Microsoft. And it's great to be hanging out with you guys today. We're gonna kind of do a hybrid here around Windows Phone enterprise apps. And I know you've probably seen lots of sessions over the years on how to build apps on a phone and even apps that seem like the enterprise. But I'm gonna spend a little more time making that more real for you as I take you into back-end services and talk about the things that companies really want today and how to make that real for them. Has everybody heard about all the great announcements we had for Windows Phone 8 last week? So that makes the enterprise more real than ever before for us. Having the device management, having encryption. There's key elements that chief information officers of big organizations have to have in order to, these days, to have smartphones in their enterprise. And so it's exciting. Windows Phone 8, we're adding in a bunch of extra enterprise features. And so I'll tie all that in with how we do the apps from end to end. And as I'll mention, probably one of the top priorities for CIOs right now is they want to expose back-end systems, whether it's SAP or Siebel or Dynamics, all those kind of back-end systems, packages, data sources, and they want to bring that all out to the devices. And I know we've all done that in different kinds of ways over the years. I'm going to show you how to do it in a consistent way using the Microsoft stack. So let's go ahead and dive into it. So I'll start off just with some high-level concepts. Some of these will sound really familiar, but I just want to kind of talk about some value propositions for mobility in the enterprise. Some will be obvious, some I'll describe in a little more detail. And then I'm going to talk about building your own mobile middleware. So has anyone ever heard of, everybody knew who Gartner is? And all the research, Gartner, Forrester, all the kind of things. One of the things they talk about a lot, and chief information officers pay attention to this, so this is really important, whether you're working at a large company or a company is your customer or you're a consultant for them, is one of them is called this Mobile Enterprise Application Platform, or MEAP. And in the past, we would build apps using all kinds of tools for the client side, all kinds of different tools to the server side, and each one was different. Several years ago, Gartner, they used to call it multi-channel access gateway. It was actually the term they used, and that's a real mouthful for their magic quadrant. Gartner's nothing if they don't have a magic quadrant, right? So, but they changed it to this MEAP thing, and there's more and more vendors who've been playing in that space, and Gartner predicted that by this year, 95% of large companies would start using MEAP solutions based on a list of critical capabilities from Gartner instead of doing point solutions to build things. And it's already exceeded their predictions, and there are a lot of different companies in this space. And one big one you may have noticed over recently, is SAP. A couple of years, they made the acquisition of Sybase to get all those iAnyware assets. So they're like Sybase Unwired Platform. They just acquired Cyclo. There's Antenna. There's a lot of small, medium, and all kinds of size companies playing in this MEAP space. So it's very real, and it's a real, and I just want to show you how you can do that same thing with the Microsoft technology that most of your customers already have so that you don't have to rip that out and go buy a proprietary system. So I'll tell you how you can do that with SQL 2012 and IIS. I'll show you how to securely publish that information out to the internet. I've spent the last couple of years talking about nothing but Azure and cloud and mobile, but I thought it'd be important to bring it back to on-premise data centers where most of our customers live today, or if they're venturing into some private cloud solutions, just to make that more real, since most people are still, running all their stuff in their own data centers these days and haven't all not, people are just dipping their toe in the pool with the cloud. So I'll show you about how to securely publish that so that any device can consume it, and then how to work with that information. And then hopefully by the end, I'll have taken all these Microsoft Lego blocks and connected them together, and then you'll be able to build it yourself. So let's dive into some concepts here. You know, what's the value prop? I talk about something called the real-time enterprise. You know, it's not something I invented. I used to work and do consulting with a lot of financial services companies and trading stock exchanges. And the notion of real-time is very important to them for trading, for confirmations, for posts, you know, things like that. Well, mobility, aside from it being great to have your device to be anywhere, mobility helps facilitate that real-time enterprise. So the obvious one, the very first one there on the list that you can read, is just what we all know. Mobile devices let us work anywhere. You know, we don't have to be sitting at our desk with an Ethernet cable into our PC. We can work anywhere, anytime, be productive at Starbucks or at the office or at home or wherever. And so those are just obvious kind of low-hanging fruit things that are good for business. The real-time enterprise thing is this real-time versus batch mode. And so what I mean by that is, and keep in mind, it's mobile and wireless together. You know, they go together. And so the notion of, I know so many companies, even today, that employees are out in the field, outside, working different places, and they're capturing data, gathering data, doing things. And then they have to go back to the office at the end of the day, and then maybe they sit in front of another terminal or an SAP console or some other system and re-enter all the data into the system at the end of the day that they collected. And so that's kind of a batch mode. We think of batch mode over the years of you know, just kind of this non-real-time way of thinking. And so the notion that you can make decisions, make deals, trade commodities, sell products in real time right where it happens, and have that go right through into your back-end systems, then you can start creating invoices for customers. You can start doing things. You can make decisions faster. And so that's the competitive advantage that you get from creating that real-time enterprise for mobility. And then again, not only capturing and sending it back to your headquarters fast, but also you being, you know, as your employees being equipped with the data they need to do their jobs in advance. You know, when I talk about the point of activity, you know, right there when they're standing in front of their customer, someone they need to talk to, they've got the information they need pushed to them so that they can make better decisions, they can make things happen that they may not, you know, because in the past, you know, there'd be oftentimes you might be somewhere and you just don't know what you're supposed to know. You don't have the information you need to make something happen. So mobility helps that. As workforces need to be more agile, mobile helps facilitate that. Conditions change rapidly sometimes in a particular market and a space and the way economies are working, and a mobile workforce is more agile to change more quickly than one that's stuck in a desk. And then, as I said right at the beginning, and you can read this anywhere, just extending those backends. And I know it sounds like we've been saying this for a lot of years, and I know we've been doing it, but it's still, you know, right up there in that top list. And when it comes to mobility, it's in the top three. They want all those back-end systems out to their employees. They want to unleash that data, unleash the you know, to empower employees to do their best work. So how do you make this happen? So I kind of just said wireless and other stuff. That's kind of ambiguous. But as I said, you know, wireless and mobile. It's like peanut butter and chocolate, right? All right. So you've got to, you know, whether it's on the enterprise, you know, your Wi-Fi networks. And today, you know, everybody knows, you know, we have the consumerization of IT happening, bring your own device, more and more employees. Not only do they have mobile devices, but sometimes they have multiple mobile devices. I hear some statistics in some places, some employees have as many as 5 devices, and they're just bringing them into the company, and they're using them, and they're connecting to your Wi-Fi networks. Or if we're in France, they're connecting to your Wi-Fi networks, right? So anyway, it's causing a greater load on the system. So we're having to react to this. Greater density and access points for Wi-Fi, more of them, changing lease times on your DHCP servers so you don't run out of IP addresses because you have so many people coming and going so rapidly. All kinds of things like that. Wireless is critical. And then obviously in the field, 2G, 3G, 4G wireless data networks is critical. Of course, the big thing with me, though, is you need to build everything assuming that you're running over a 28.8K modem, and it has to succeed in the worst wireless conditions rather than build something designed for big, fat pipes. So I talked about mobile middleware just briefly in the table of contents. The middleware is acting as this a server facade. I have lots of customers who they have all kinds of packages, things they use. Maybe they're mobile applications that go from a server all the way down to the device, and it's all one package product that they buy. Sometimes it's a data source. And what I see a lot of times is people in the field, it might be on a device, it might be on a laptop. And I hear complaints of people having to re-enter the same data over and over again in different applications they're using. And they're like, why do I have to keep entering this data? What's going on? You know, and it's because you've got four or five different back-end systems you're using to run your company, and they don't know about each other, and they weren't designed by the same company. One of the things that mobile middleware, among a lot of other things, is that creating that server facade where devices just enter the data once, and then the middleware fans it out, sends the data, even if it has to do it the same data five times to the back end. Let the mobile middleware take care of it. And then the other thing you do is a lot of existing systems are not designed for efficient wireless wire protocols going out over wireless networks that may be slow. The connections may be intermittent and dropping. And so it's up to you to take big fat SOAP protocols or other things like that that might be depending on lots of XML or even other wire protocols that might be slow on some networks. And it's up to you in that mobile middleware to interface with that on your high-speed network in your data center, but then just send really lightweight information out over the internet. Multi-channel access gateway, I'll talk about that. It's just the way to publish it, whether it's a VPN, or I'll show you how you don't have to use a VPN to securely publish this information out. Because while I'm talking here about Microsoft Stack, and I'm also talking about Windows Phone, I also recognize that all our customers use every phone there is. And that's just reality. They're using every device from every manufacturer. And so as someone who wants to serve their customer well, you need to make sure that you're building something that can work with any device the same way, not just one. It's really important. Development tools, things like Visual Studio, same being able to use this. And these are part of these Gartner critical capabilities, being able to use the same kind of tool, whether you're using that same tool to build the app on the device, or to build the integration on back-end systems. So you don't have to keep using other one-off tools and packages to do that. And then being able to create complete transactions offline is another critical. It might seem obvious, but most systems that we work with in our companies today all assume this kind of always-on connection, or they're web-based or something like that. And you need to make sure that you've built something where you can complete transactions in the field without being connected. So here's just a consolidated picture of, and it tries to simplify things, but what MEEP looks like and kind of what I've just kind of described to you. You've got all kinds of back-end data sources. You know, every company is different. Every company buys packages from all kinds of vendors. So it's data sources like databases. It could be flat files coming from mainframes. The back-end systems, again, could be dynamic CRM. It could be SAP. It could be lots of things. It could be systems that have been built internally by the customer. Your ability to pull all that data together, to aggregate the data you need in one place in this mobile middleware consistently, not, to talk to this package, I've got to use this kind of hand-coded thing to make that work. And to talk to this package, I've got to do it a different way. You need to be able, because part of this is we want speed, time to market, your ability to create this quickly, and we need consistency and return on investment so you can build new systems over and over again, or no matter which package back-end system you're talking to, you talk to it the same way. Because when your developers are trained, you want them to be able to just know one thing and keep using it over and over again rather than something different. So aggregate systems together, the data you need. And then expose those. Sure, we're going to use web services to expose those to make sure that any device can talk to them. And then the multi-channel access gateway to publish those out in a way that any device can see it, and whether it's VPN or no VPN, works similarly. And then any of these, any device, any laptop can consume this data, pull it down, work with it, send it back up. So that's kind of the simple view of what MEAP is. So let's talk about making that real with SQL Server 2012 and IIS running on your Windows servers. So what are our ingredients? What's our to-do list? What do we need in order to do that? So I kind of talked in the, just talking to the picture. EAI to back-end sources, but that works consistently no matter which one it is. Aggregate and cache that data. Now, I don't necessarily mean cache as in AppFabric cache or Memcache. What I mean is maybe customers come from this system and products come from this system, and we put them together. That's the aggregation. The caching part is interesting. You might need, let's say you have a, you're building something for a customer, and they need to deploy 50,000 devices, and they're all going to be hitting the system all the time. Your back-end package, your back-end systems that are running at the company, they may not have the ability to scale and handle the load of 50,000 devices. So you need to help them. So that middleware system, it's pre-fetching data as it aggregates it together, but then those back-end systems are only touched from this one middleware. All 50,000 devices, they're just pounding on your middleware that you built that you've properly scaled out and can handle the load. So that's kind of what I mean by caching it there, so that you take the load off those back-end systems. And then, of course, whatever schema is created, the database tables that come from the different systems, then you create, you know, mobile business objects, basically, that reflect that schema. And then you take web services to publish, to send that data out to the internet to be consumed by mobile devices. So with SQL Server, we have something called SSIS that many of you are probably familiar with, SQL Server Integration Services. It's a great way, and it's a unified way to talk to lots of back-end systems. I've listed a bunch of them here on the slide. Whether it's a package system, whether it's a database, or maybe it's a database that's not listed on here, but it can. But even if it, as long as it works with ODBC or OLADB or ADO.NET, you can talk to it. Messaging systems, message buses, pulling things off a message bus, dropping them back on, flat files coming from a mainframe, whatever it is. Or if you need to call web services on the back end to get your data, maybe to it from a cloud-based system to pull it together. Use all that. So it's important to have a middleware system with these kind of adapters like you get with SSIS and SQL Server. Now you might be saying, why aren't you just talking about BizTalk? BizTalk is also something for that, with lots of adapters. That's what it's made for. BizTalk is definitely an option. The only reason I'm talking about SQL Server in this case is because it's an easy way for you to aggregate a lot of data and kind of cache it in tables. So you can imagine kind of like staging tables, right? So we connect adapters. So what I'm going to walk you through is using SSIS to do that. And so, and I won't go too deep in this, you know, because you're here for a mobile session, but I'll just kind of, so that you can see for real pulling data from other systems, and I'll simulate those systems. But just the technologies, data flow tasks. In this case, I'm just going to use an OLADB source and destination, but again, it could be an adapter that talks to SAP, for instance. And then the key thing here at the end is, and you're going to see me hitting this at every tier of the system, is security, security, security. Systems are getting hacked like never before, every day. Companies are under attack from hackers every single day. You can see it in the logs of the systems, governments, everything. And so you've got to be thinking about security like you never have before. And so like, while we often think about security as like SSL or VPN, you need to think about it all along the chain from where the data starts all the way to the end. So I'm going to always emphasize how you secure each step of the way. So in this case, the very first step at the very back end is luckily our SSIS packages can be secured and digitally signed so that they can be encrypted and password protected as they flow from the back end to SQL Server. And here's kind of a quick little picture. And again, this would be like an on-premise or a private cloud. And so I've just got some, these guys, circles up here just representing different possible back-end systems or data or EDI or things like that, and how SSIS adapters are going to pull those things in and then cache them, aggregate them into SQL Server. But of course, the fun part is looking at code, right? Because that's what you expect at a 200-level session, right? We're all in the right session, aren't we? Okay. All right. So I'm going to simulate and just do simple examples to convey these concepts to you. So, you know, obviously you can do much more complex things, but I want to simplify it. So I'm using three different access databases on my laptop here to represent. You can see one of them here is representing an ERP system with just a list of products and quantities. Next to it, I'm simulating a CRM system with just a short list of potential customers in there. Or they could be mobile MVPs. I don't know what those people are. They look familiar. And then this one here is empty. This could be simulating a mainframe where you're going to place orders. And so, of course, it's empty because I haven't done anything yet, because the order is going to come from the handheld device and be sent out. So you see the data that's in there. So you know we need to get that into SQL Server. So let's see. I've got SQL Server 2012 Management Studio. And so you can see I've got the customers, orders, and products table. And right now they're all empty. But I'll refresh them just to show you there. And so the first thing I'm going to do is we'll talk about SSIS. So in SQL 2012, you can probably see maybe by the way it looks that SQL 2012 is embraced and is using Visual Studio 2010 as its IDE for everything. And so whether that's the Management Studio just to work with tables and data and rows and columns, or for business intelligence. And so this is SQL Server Data Tools. And here is where I build SSIS packages. And the great thing is here is you can get started, and in most cases, if you don't need to do any special scripting or transformations, like ETL-type transformations, the key takeaway here is the drag-and-drop nature and simplicity to get you going of connecting to these back-end systems. Because that's the important thing. I don't want to make things hard for people, because you never know who the developers and the team members are going to be. And so we need to make sure that we try to go with the simplest path possible. So I've created these data flow tasks. You saw the CRM system and the ERP, so products, customers, and orders. And when you click on any one of these, it takes you into the data flow tab and shows you OLEDB source and destination. If I click on that, it's a OLEDB connection going from SQL Server, in this case, the orders, out to one of those access databases and columns. Now, that's just one system there, but I can click here and look at customers and also going into the mobile middleware. And you can also see, again, how those tables are mapped. And again, this is a very super simple example, but I just want to illustrate the concept to you. So we're going to use SSIS. And of course, like I mentioned, security is important at every step of the way. So if I just click anywhere, on the designer here, and I go over to the right and look in the properties section, you can see, where do I have it? Here we go, protection level. And you can see how I have the choice of how I want to encrypt that package and that data flow, whether it's a user key, whether it's a password, things like that. So let's just run it. I'm not going to debug this, but we'll just run it. And so it just executed the tasks. We like the green checkboxes, don't we? All right, so everybody's green. So let's go double check and see if it did what we wanted. So let's go back in here, and I'm going to refresh customers. All right, there's Peter, Jenny, Martin, Andy, and Nick. Orders I expect to be empty because there aren't orders. Those are coming from another direction. And the products. There's Mango and all his friends. All right, so that's the first key concept, SSIS, aggregating data, pulling into SQL Server. You will have all those things in SQL jobs that will execute at different times. There's even technology. Are you familiar with change data capture, CDC, in SQL Server? You can even work with change data capture enabled tables in SQL Server, so when it sees the differences, it can do its thing. So some great technology here. All right. Now, it wouldn't be a session with me if I didn't find some ridiculous way to throw in replication, right? Even if it doesn't seem like it's appropriate. And I did. But I am a student of scalability. I really do watch YouTube videos of architects at Facebook and eBay and places, and where they talk about how they scaled their systems. Scalability is so important, especially with mobile devices. You know, we're not dealing with just hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of PCs. You know, we're talking, you know, in some cases, tens of thousands, millions of devices, especially if you're building consumer-based apps or apps that are go from consumer to business. And so you need to make sure your system can handle that. Now, I've done lots of talking in the past about how to do that in Azure, and it's a lot simpler to do things in Azure in the cloud because all the hard work is done for you. You just check on things and turn some silly knobs, right? So I want to tell you about how you can do it in your data center or the private cloud. I mean, think about Facebook, for instance. So Facebook, you know, you've got you and 900 million of your best friends all going to the Facebook webpage, and you don't even think about why it comes up so fast or how that happens. But the reason is, you know, we all start off with baby steps, and we think, oh, here's our database, and here's some web servers and some websites or web services, and I call them, and I hit the database, and that's okay. But you all have to know, no matter what database, if it's SQL Server, Oracle, DB2, Teradata, they're all going to run out of gas at some point. You can only handle so many users, right? There's a saturation point. So you end up moving to a system where it's more hierarchical. Maybe you have a database at the top of your pyramid, but in the case of Facebook, they kind of started their journey with MySQL, and MySQL had some replication technology to do download-only replication, and they would create multiple, you know, it wasn't enough to keep adding web servers and scaling out. That only took you so far. You needed to horizontally scale the databases as well, right, to get that greater scale. And so Facebook uses replication to do that with their databases. And then if you've ever heard about NoSQL databases, that's growing in popularity. Those have built-in replication too. And so baby steps, the first step might be, oh, I'm going to take the customer table from my master database and replicate it out to this one over here, and this one goes here and here and here. And I can use that to horizontally partition. And then when that starts to run out of gas, I can take parts of tables and, you know, put half the customer names in one database and the other half in another on another server and scale out that way. Some of the NoSQL systems have the ability, that's called sharding. Some NoSQL systems can do that automatically. I want to show you how you can do that with the Microsoft technology that your customers already own. So we can do the same thing here. The last part of the Facebook, for instance, is not only is it doing the sharding and scaling out maybe 30,000 servers, but then it's using Memcache. I think they got 300 terabytes of data all in RAM. So thank you, 64-bit computing and distributed cache. Well, luckily, we have that at Microsoft as well, and you get it for free, part of Windows Server. So step one, SQL Server, transactional replication, merge replication. You can use that to start doing download-only copies to other SQL servers beneath it to scale out the servers. And it's easy to use, you know, point-and-click wizard. Transactional replication works, you know, basically off the transaction log, and when transactions are completed, it sends the data over. So you can do that, filter, so you can say, I just want customers here, I want orders here, products here, or shard it even further and go as far as you need to. And then those and then each of those SQL Server subscribers that's pulling down that data, they'll get all that data. And there's kind of the 80-20 rule from websites, maybe the 90-10 rule, I don't know. Most people are selecting. Most people are saying, give me data. A smaller percentage are inserting data or updating or deleting data. And so most of your sharded, load balanced, you know, horizontally scaled databases, they'll all be for selects. And then you'll have another group over here that'll be for data coming up from the devices that end up going back up there. And then lastly, because that's like, great, Rob, you told me how to super scale a system in my data center, but I need to have failover. I need to have active data centers. Can I do that? Yeah. So we have peer-to-peer transactional replication. that could have your, you can imagine your SQL server at the top of your pyramid here and one in another data center on the other side of the continent or the other side of the world. And they can all do peer-to-peer and keep each other in sync and have their own hierarchies in multiple data centers. You could use that for failover, or you could use that for an active-active system for an extreme scale. So there's my 2 cents on scaling out. And so that's kind of what that looks like there. I'm just going to show you a little sliver of it as I go. And so we already saw pulling data from back-end systems, aggregating it together in SQL Server. So now the next layer down is SQL Server Publisher in the middle, publishing out that data to SQL Server subscribers to let you scale out to handle a greater load for your customers and your company, and then replication out to another cloud. Cool stuff. So what's the next part of the package? Now we need to take that data out of the database and get it out to the mobile devices. And we're going to do it with web services. You'll see the word multi-channel a lot. You know, Gartner was always using multi-channel. We need to make sure this works with any device, not just RIM, not just iPhone, not just Windows Phone. It needs to work with every device. And so multi-channel is the key. So REST and JSON. I don't want to say the lowest common denominator because sometimes that sounds negative, but that is what every device works with today that you can count on. You can use SOAP and XML too if you want to, but REST is lighter weight. Remember, we want to build systems that succeed at 28.8 GPRS speeds, right? 56K. So you want to, if there's 20 different ways to send the same data, let's do it the lightweight way, right? So REST is lighter than SOAP. And JSON serializes data in a much more compact format than XML. Obviously, binary could be the best, but then binary might block a particular device, right? It might be proprietary, and you don't want to do that. You need to be open to everything. And then we model those business objects on the server, and I'm going to show you, walk through that, and we hydrate those. We take those business objects, fill them with data, and then we serialize them as JSON and send them back to the mobile devices, Windows Phone 8, Windows Phone 7.5. I'm going to show you here in a little bit. And then you load balance IIS, use App Fabric caching, which you get for free with Windows Server. So you have distributed caching. You know how to scale out your database server, so you're in great shape there. And then at the bottom, you know, SSL and basic authentication, not rocket science, doesn't seem like the most sophisticated way, but remember, it's something that you know will work with every kind of device, right? And so now, when you look at your picture, typically in the past, maybe you saw a bunch of IIS servers, and they're all hitting a single SQL server. So now you see they're not even touching the SQL server at the top. They're just touching subscribers. And again, you can just keep adding subscribers, you know, and take the load off. And also, those subscribers, they don't all have to be like SQL Server Enterprise or things like that. You know, if you can use Standard, you can go down level. In some cases, you can use Express and not spend any money at all. Just it depends on the data size and what works best for your enterprise. So we'll hit those load balance, and then we'll put everything in App Fabric cache so that you have an even greater level of performance so that people hit it and they get the data right away. Because speed and scalability go together. Some people think they're different, but speed, my ability to reach out, get my data, and be out, and let the next guy in quickly, gives me more scalability, because more people can get the data in a time slice than, you know, and so, and there's some great features in the newest App Fabric cache. You know, the best SQL query you can ever run is not running it at all. If you don't have to touch the database, if you need some data for your device and you don't have to touch the database, it's in cache, get it from cache, get it from RAM, and get it, you know, in a millisecond or a nanosecond instead of select star, blah, blah, blah. If the data's not there in cache, though, we've got great stuff in App Fabric cache that lets you query the database, get the answer back, and put the answer in cache automatically for you so that the next time it's ready. All right, let's take a look and see what some of this looks like. All right, so we'll minimize these guys here. So I've got a Visual Studio. I've just got a project that is called MVC REST. So I talked about just creating some business objects, you know, mobile business objects. So in this case, they're very simple, just a customer, ID and name. You saw one of them. Products just had ID, name, quantities. You'll have an object, a model, you know, for each each of this, you know, to model the schema appropriately, that we'll pull back and we'll turn this into JSON. And the key, also, one thing, I know I've spent a lot of time over the last few years talking about using Windows Communication Foundation, WCF, and that's something we have had for a long time on the server and in Azure. This time, I just wanted to show you something new. Has anybody heard of the new ASP.NET, MVC, ASP, Web API? It's part of MVC4. I just wanted to let you see this new stuff, because I know you probably know WCF pretty well. And I'll tell you why I like this new web API. It just makes, if you want to do what I'm trying to do, which is just REST JSON services, I can do it much faster using this particular technology than I can with WCF. WCF is powerful, but it does, as a Swiss Army knife, it does a lot of things. And it might take me longer to do simple things than this does. So this is great. And it just kind of follows the MVC idea with controllers and models. So here's my model. Here's the order controller, which I'll use at the end here. But let me show you the customers. You know, so basically, I will call in here and just do a just call a URL, a URI, a GET request against customer, and it's going to return that customer object. I showed you the model for customer. Just connect to the database. Just doing a simple select. In fact, you know, the best way to show this to you is probably just to run it. And let's step through. Is it okay to step through code here? Is debugging all right? Okay. I just want to get permission. I don't want to freak anybody out. All right. Debugging's cool. So the cool thing is I don't even have my mobile device yet, but I can test it using Internet Explorer. So calling localhost, and I was like, all right, so there I'm calling just API customers. It's just a really typical REST-type call, not doing a SOAP call. And now you see I hit the breakpoint. And we'll just go through a little bit of this, and then I'll run it and finish it. But I'm just doing the stuff you know already, you know, how to make a simple SQL connection. I'm going to send back a customer. I'm working with a customer model that models the customer tables, but I need to send a list of customers. So I'm going to create a generic list of customers here. And then I'm going to just use the data reader and read forward. I'm going to create, as you can see the breakpoint, I'm going to create a new customer object. And then I'm just going to hydrate that customer object, you know, based on what I pull back from SQL Server. And so you can see it's back there and it's filling it. And then I'm going to add that to the customer list. And I'm just going to keep looping through until I return it and fill that list. I'm going to return that list of customers back. And I can even see if the answer is right here in Internet Explorer. So I open it up, and there is the JSON representation of Peter, Jenny, Martin, Andy, and Nick, and their ID numbers. Simple example, but if you saw the XML representation, you'd know it'd be a lot bigger and take more bytes. So this is real simple, and it's really easy to work with. So I'm just going to keep this running here, and let's jump back. All right. Securely publishing the data to the internet. I know a lot of people think the only way to consume secure information from a mobile device is a VPN, and that's just not correct. It's one way to do it. But you don't have to have a VPN to securely consume and work with data for your enterprise apps. How do I know that? Because almost all of you maybe work at a company or work for a company that uses a really popular product called Microsoft Exchange for email. Like most of the planet's using Exchange these days for email, a bigger and bigger portion. And guess how everybody makes that out, puts that out to the internet? They've been using something for the last decade called ISA server to publish that email out to the internet so that you could get your webmail, Outlook web access, and then that same thing that you did to make that allowed you to get Exchange Active Sync out to your devices, going all the way back to like Windows Mobile 5. And I remember when we started doing push notifications and things like that for email, push mail. So it's something that's very common. And that's just how it works. And so so today our newest versions of kind of where ISA is, and ISA still works fine today. It's just it's 32-bit. If you need to scale up more, you might use Threat Management Gateway or UAG with 64-bit. And then depending on the load, you can load balance those as well and create an array. And then those things live, if you created a DMZ, or depending on where you live, maybe you created a DMZ, but you might have a front firewall, maybe a hardware firewall here, and then UAG or TMG in here in the middle that Nick Card pointing out, NIC card pointing in, back firewall, maybe. Now you may have stuff you want to pump, depending on, you know, every customer is different. Every security architect is different. Some of them say, yeah, go ahead and have the published information come from behind the back firewall in CorpNet. Some say, I want to put those in the DMZ. I'll leave that to you. But we have a cert on this thing, and then it just listens on an external IP address on that outward NIC card, or you could bind lots of NIC cards together, and like I said, load balance it and point it to a VIP, you know, for your load balancer. Like if you're using the load balancer that's built in to UAG, Windows Server, or you could use F5 or Cisco, lots of great load balancing products out there. Then you just update your DNS on the outside, say, yes, I'm going to point to this webserver.contoso.com, and it's going to point back to a virtual directory of your load balance web servers behind that. Other features of this way of publishing secure information is you can choose to either pass through that SSL tunnel through UAG, for instance, all the way back to the web server if you want to, via SSL bridging. Or you can offload that traffic and lighten the load if you want to all those load balance IIS servers and terminate the SSL out there at the UAG, out at forefront right there. Either way, the great thing is, even if it's an SSL, you already have your hardware firewalls potentially. UAG, these things work just as well as any firewall. It has deep packet inspection. It does the ports. It does everything you expect. And so it just adds extra layer security, looking for malware, make sure bad things aren't getting into your company. You can pre-authenticate out in the DMZ. You can do the old fun constrained delegation, Active Directory, blah, 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 fun stuff. Or you can do it back on the web servers. But I guess the key takeaway here also is not only is no VPN required, I'm going to give you an example. I go to a lot of mobile conferences with all kinds of device makers, and there are some people that think, I got to have VPN, or it's not secure. I want you to think about what you're doing when you're using a VPN on a phone. You are extending your network all the way out to that phone, the whole network, all of it. So now you've created this secure tunnel between your phone and the network. Well, is that a great idea? It seems secure. I read the brochure, and the guy said, this is as secure as it gets. What if, though, there's something bad on the phone, a virus? What if you have a phone that also has access to a potential app store, marketplace, Play Store, whatever you want to call it, where apps are not vetted, where apps are not checked for malware and problems, and so any kind of app in the world could download to your device. So I might just be a regular user, well-intentioned, and I have a device, and I've downloaded some games and some things that I thought were fun, but it turns out they're not fun at all. And then I create a VPN connection back to my network, and I have these apps on it. Well, what just became the biggest threat to my network in history? It's not hackers attacking from different countries on my web servers trying to find weaknesses. It was an app. It was a Trojan horse that came from an app store, from an app that wasn't vetted, that wasn't checked out to make sure that it's okay. And now that app can see right through that tunnel. So what you really created was a nice tunnel for you can drive a truck through, and that malware from that app can start attacking your network through that VPN tunnel. So just keep that in mind. That's not the normal case, but it's an edge case, and it's a possible case, and we've seen it a lot. And so if I publish discrete web services just to do the little things I need instead of publishing a tunnel into my network, may not be a bad idea, actually. So that's my key takeaway on a great, secure way to publish where you don't need VPN. And so that's what that looks like here. So now your IIS servers are being reached, and so this is just one way to look at, the notion of a front firewall, a back firewall, and going through reverse proxy like UAG that's doing deep packet inspection. All right, last but not least, we've got to do something with this data because it is a mobile enterprise session, right? So I've taken you all the way to the back. Let's get to the device where the fun stuff is. So we need to consume that data, and we need to work with it offline, most importantly. So what's our little checklist here for mobile data? We need to consume those REST JSON services from an app. So that could be an app I've built, you know, using our tooling for Windows Phone. Or if you've heard about Windows Phone 8, we have IE10. You can also do it from IE9 on 7.5. Key takeaway is how you get at that data. You know, we know how to consume REST services normally from an app. When you're doing it from a browser, you use AJAX calls, right? And IE10 is just you can imagine AJAX gets faster when you have JIT compiled JavaScript, right? So it's great stuff. We need to deserialize that JSON representation of your data, which will happen faster if you have IE10 versus another browser on the device. And then we got to take it offline. We need to save it so you can keep working with it, because customers need to keep working, employees need to keep working, whether the internet is there or it's gone. And we save it offline. If you're working today with IE9-based systems, there's something called web storage that works across every browser. It's a name value pair, kind of key pair solution. The limit's about 5 meg. But you can take that REST and JSON stream and just slam it right in there. It works easily. A new feature of IE10 that you're now seeing on Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8 is something called IndexedDB. This is the next generation of, you know, offline web databases. And so you may have heard of WebSQL, and that was deprecated, but everyone's behind on the W3C with IndexedDB. So IndexedDB, it's kind of like an object store, kind of like NoSQL I was talking about earlier, except it can put indexes on these, so for fast retrieval. And you start off with 50 meg, and then you can ask permission to expand. So this is when you have, if you want to go with the web and you need to do a larger offline solution, then you'll start looking at IndexedDB. If you're looking at an app, today you're using SQL CE if you want. You can use file serialization. I'm going to do a demo where I'm just going to quickly do some use object file serialization instead. Or you may have heard last week when we made our announcement about Phone 8, we talked about SQLite is coming to Phone 8 and to Windows 8. And so we'll have open source libraries if you want to work with SQLite. So anyway, those are some of your choices to take that offline. Then you just need to work with the data, capture new data. And then, of course, part of our security thing, we got to data at rest. It's got to be secure, just like data in transit, data everywhere else. And so you need to password protect and encrypt that data. And on Phone 8, you've heard we're going to have BitLocker. So we'll have full device encryption. And then device management, MDM, exchange you have today, can enforce a PIN. So you can make sure that people can't get on the device if the device is lost or stolen. And then everything will be encrypted in Phone 8. So this is great stuff. If you're on 7.5, your offline storage, and you're on an app-by-app level, you can also do encryption, where you can encrypt the data stored. You can use the database. SQL CE lets you encrypt everything. We have .NET access to do AES-256 encryption. So kind of our last thing here is just the devices, Windows Phone, consuming this data and taking it offline. So let's do the fun stuff and pull it all together here. All right, so got my REST services running. Now we need to pull it down to Windows Phone. So I've got an app here. Think of it more of as a scratch pad, really. It's just I just had everything, the basic concepts I wanted to show you all in one screen to keep it simple. You want to download data. You need to save it offline. You need to be able to reload it offline and not have to call the web service again if you already have the data. You need to view it, work with it. And in this case, I'll place a simple order, and then you need to upload that order. And then you need to take it all the way back, not just back to the database, but all the way back to the origin system. In this case, it'll be a mainframe. Okay, it's access. All right, so let's just do that and walk through a little bit of code here. So I'm going to click on download data. And in here, I'm targeting Windows Phone 7.5. And so I'm going to use the web client. And keep in mind, as you probably, if you watched the announcement and heard everything last week, all this code, all these apps that you're building today for Windows Phone 7.5, it is not wasted time. All this stuff is going to work on Phone 8. And so this is great stuff. You're building value now. You don't need to wait till Windows 8 and wait for tools. in the future to start to build apps that are going to work in the future. So you have this kind of forward compatibility, which is great stuff. And I think we're getting some cool compilation, too, to make the apps even faster, which is great. So let's just go here. So I'm just going to use web client, and everything's asynchronous. And so I'm just going to call, remember that API I pointed to in the web browser? I'm just doing the exact same thing here with the URI. And then I'm just going to make this async call. It's going to call get products and customers. And then you see down here on the taskbar, something else is flashing. So it's my other instance of Visual Studio. And it looks like I've got three instances of Visual Studio running, so that's always good. All right, so now I'm on the web server, and I'm calling that same thing I did, getting customers, just like I showed you when we did it from the browser. Now you can see it's actually calling it from the device. So we don't need to see it again, so let's just run. And then you see the callback, because we're asynchronous, so we came back to the device. And in this case, as I mentioned, I'm just I said I want you to pull all that data into a collection, an in-memory collection, because that's what you're getting REST and JSON anyway. So let's just pull it out. And obviously, I'm clicking on the wrong one here, but you can see I got five Contoso fruit models of type customer, and there's Peter, Jenny, Martin, Andy, and Nick. And so all those guys came back, and we've got them in memory. So we're in good shape. So now the next thing I want to do is I want to save that data offline. So I want to serialize that in-memory representation of that collection of objects. Now, I could do inserts into SQL CE, you know, via link to SQL. Or when SQLite comes along and we start working with that in the future, you'll do inserts into that. In this case, I'm just going to serialize that data to isolated storage. And so I have this fun, crazy code here that allows me to... yeah, I know. I don't want to step over. Anyway, I have some code here that just shows you how to save this collection and serialize it and write it as an object so that, you know, and I serialize it as JSON so it's smaller on the device. And so now let's just close the app. And then, because we've saved the data offline, and then let's run it again. And then this time we're not going to call the cool web API, and we're just going to load that offline data. So I'm going to do the reverse of this. I'm going to, you know, load that observable collection of objects from the device locally. And then let's view the data. And here I'm just doing a simple, I'm just attaching the, you know, the collection to two list boxes, one for products and one for customers, so I can see that. And so now you see your list. And so let's say I choose mango, and then I've got a query to show me how much, what quantity I've got left. And so I'm going to choose a quantity. So mango is product ID 1, and we're going to choose a quantity of 3. And let's order it from Martin. And then let's place that order offline. And so we'll step through here. And locally, I'm just kind of auto-incrementing a local kind of identity column for me, but I won't use it on the server. And then here, I'm just first testing to make sure there's actually something in those list boxes. And then I'm determining, you know, the selected item that I chose, and then grabbing there. So product ID 1, customer ID 3, and quantity was, we chose 3, and then I'm going to add it to an order collection that I've created. And so we'll have that. So now there's a collection of orders in memory ready to go, and I've placed that order. So now to finish the solution here from the device standpoint, I've got to upload it. So first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to just use a little link to just grab the first, you know, order there in the collection. We only have one, but if you had a bunch, it would just grab the first one. Yep, I know. And then we're going to just run through here and use the serializer. I'm going to grab that collection from models.order that you can see there. Do a memory stream. We're going to write out the object to an array. And I'm going to use that same web client. This time I'm calling orders API, REST API. And I'm just going to upload this asynchronously. And now you can see we've now gone back to my other instance running of Visual Studio. And we're calling post using a REST call there. And then just like the example I showed you before, we're just going to do a simple connection. We're doing an insert, just adding in the parameters. And then we just execute non-query. And then the callback comes back to the device. We're hoping that it says we get an answer true. And this is all, I know this is really simple. You could have just done this fire and forget kind of thing and dumped the data in there. It's always good to have ACKs and NACKs, though, right? Especially with mobile devices, unreliable wireless networks. So send back something to let the device know that, hey, this succeeded, you know? So you're kind of doing your own little message queuing to make sure that everything's okay. All right. Now we set that collection to null. We're going to remove, because I had a temporary object, the order object there, and I'm going to pull that out. And then we're all done. And so then, if we just go look in SQL Server, and we refresh the orders, then you'll see, yep, there's the order that we placed. And it made it into SQL Server, so that's good. So this means it's working. But we have one step left to go because we're building. This is our middleware. This isn't the final data. It's our middleware. So the last thing we'll do is go back to ERP, our project here, and let's do the orders data flow. And I'll run this. And again, it would have been on a job, or it could have been on a change data capture table. And so we run that. And then here's our empty mainframe. And I refresh that. And then looks like our mainframe managed to get its data, customer ID, product ID, and quantity. So we've done the complete round trip with the Microsoft Meep stack. So hopefully that's made that very real for you. And so let's take a look at what did we create here? What is the big kahuna, right? Wow, there's a lot of stuff here. But anyway, this is kind of the overall architecture at a high level, kind of a logical architecture. You would build out something, but you can clearly see pulling from multiple data sources, SSIS, it's the same way, drag and drop. Don't want to gloss over. If you have to do complicated transformations, you could have to do some scripting. But a lot of things you'll just pull through, and it's simple. Aggregating a SQL Server, using replication to scale out horizontally, peer-to-peer replication to geo-replicate to other multiple data centers for failover, just in case something bad happens to your data center. IIS, hitting SQL subscribers instead of the SQL Server publisher, and you can scale that as much. And then load balancing IIS, using App Fabric Cache at that level as well. So hopefully you're hitting RAM instead of disk, going through UAG, securely publishing, not needing VPN to do that, taking it offline, doing offline transactions, and then sending it all back, getting the ACKs back that you know that it succeeded, and then sending it on its way to the final back-end system. And there you have it. So hopefully our takeaways and I kind of talked about some of the value props around mobility and why companies are moving to it, how to build your own Meep using the Microsoft technology that you already have, that your customers already have, they already own, how to securely publish it out without needing a VPN, how to work with that data. I showed you one way to work with it. Other ways will be SQLite and SQL CE. And then hopefully the call to action for you is that you can go out now and know that tools that you probably already know very well can be used to build this mobile middleware stack that can give you that end-to-end solution with any back-end package. We've got a few more sessions coming after this. Localization, optimizing app performance, that's a good one. MVVM, you know you love that. And then you can come and find me, ask any kind of question you want. I'll be at the Windows booth hanging out there today. I'll be there tomorrow. I'm going to be here tonight at Ask the Experts. So please come by and visit with me. And we can go on a deeper dive on this and answer your questions. And evaluations are critical for all of us. 5 is the best, 1's the worst. So hopefully you do a good evaluation, and I really appreciate your time. And now the best part, of course, is I have a Lumia 900 device to give away, so you got to stay for that. So I'm going to ask you a question, and you have to raise your hand. If you blurt it out, you know, I won't know who did it. So I'm going to ask a question from the session, and whoever gets the right question with their hand raised, nobody blurting out, you'll get the device. What technology would you use, based on what I told you, to scale out SQL Server horizontally? Yes, you, sir. Close. No, I was like, thinking of a particular type. Yes, you. Huh? Replication. I talked about the replication that's built in. Huh? No, always on. No, he's right. Replication is what I was talking about. Replicating, publishing. So publishing from your master SQL Server, replicating out subscribers. Replication is what? And we have it built in. So congratulations. And thank you so much for coming. I really appreciate you spending some time with me. And definitely don't hesitate to come find me at the booth or ask the experts. And I'm happy to spend time with you talking about anything around this stuff. Thank you. And, oh, and yes, evals. Also, if you've been to some previous mobile sessions, definitely look at doing some of the evals. I know the system wasn't working a few days ago.